The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Real Recognition Radio, a program designed to promote a positive work environment. Your hosts are Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. In this hour, you will be motivated to motivate, increase morale, productivity, loyalty, and reduce turnover. Learn how some companies get it while others don't. Now, here are your hosts, Roy and Max.
Welcome to Real Recognition Radio, the show that's all about building relationships, inspiring greatness, and creating a workplace where people can thrive. I'm Roy Saunderson, joined as always with my friend and colleague Max Brown, and we're from the Recognition Management Institute. How's it going there, Max?
I'm doing great. Looking forward to a great show.
No kidding. I mean, when you look at workplace statistics and surveys, I think it was salary.com that said that almost 20% of employees leave because of a lack of appreciation. Go figure.
Yeah. Well, and not only that, but, you and I have talked about this for years, and why recognition, appreciation are so important. So what a great opportunity today to talk about appreciation in a greater perspective and why so many people feel unappreciated at work and what are the languages of appreciation, which I think is going to be really a lot of fun.
Very much so, Max. I think you're led in very well into our guest today, Dr. Paul White, who's the co-author of The Five Languages of Appreciation in the Workplace, which was written with Dr. Gary Chapman, the author of The Five Love Languages. Now, Paul is a psychologist. He's worked with for-profit as well as non-profit organizations, families, and leaders across the world. His primary professional focus is helping make work relationships work. Paul lectures around the world, and his expertise has been requested by the Melkin Institute, Princeton University, Dartmouth University, and numerous national organizations. He's been published extensively in professional journals, including the Journal of Diversity, the Journal of Financial Planning, Individual Psychology, and the Journal of School Psychology. And Paul, we're just delighted to have you on the show today.
Thank you. I'm really pleased to be with you.
Wonderful. Well, I'm sure many of our listeners will be familiar with Dr. Gary Chapman's work with the five love languages in marriage and families. In fact, my wife and I often buy that book as a gift for newlyweds that we may be going to a wedding for. wish we had it at the beginning of our marriage, that's for sure.
Yep. But
how did the idea come about, transitioning that great work into a kind of a similar framework for the workplace?
Well, Roy, it was similar for me. My wife and I had been personally positively impacted by the five love languages, and I work as a consultant often with family-owned businesses and with people that work together and then dealing with business transition plans and helping them figure out those issues. And obviously, there are a lot of relational issues in that, and just one experience really sort of captures how this got started. I was working with a family. I went in and talked to the senior owner who was in his 60s, and we're transitioning it to his son. I said, how are things going? And he said, they're great. I think my son's getting it. He's stepping up, and, things are going smoothly, and, a positive report. And then I went across the hall and asked his son how things were going. He said, I don't think this is going to work. He said, I'm not getting it. My dad, I don't hear anything positive. I just hear, what I need to learn and all this. And, bells are going off in my head thinking, these guys aren't connecting. And it seemed like there were not just communication issues, but the son didn't feel valued or appreciated. And so I approached Dr. Chapman about the idea of trying to apply the five languages to work-based relationships. And because of my background of being a psychologist and, you know, relational oriented as well as working with businesses, he felt like that was a good match. And so we went on from there and started trying it out with different organizations. And the first step really was to develop an assessment tool, which became the Motivating by Appreciation Inventory, to translate the actions and languages functionally in the workplace.
Gotcha, gotcha. Now, I know there will be some of our listeners who aren't as familiar with the five languages. Could you, for their benefit, tell us what they actually are?
Absolutely. Yeah, the five languages are words of affirmation, quality time, acts of service, tangible gifts, and physical touch. And yes, physical touch even occurs and can be appropriate in the workplace. That gives some HR professionals seizures sometimes when we talk about that. But those are the five languages.
Great, great. Now, if you identify your five languages of appreciation in the workplace, would these really equate totally with the five love languages, which you know more typically are for personal relationships? I mean, are they the same or?
Right. You know. That question comes up a lot, especially since the five love languages, a lot of people have known that since Dr. Chapman sold 6 million books of that. What we found is that physical touch is in the workplace. It's usually a spontaneous celebration, you know, a high five, a fist bump or whatever, but it is clearly less important in the workplace. But what we found is that as we've done a little bit of research of identifying people's primary love language and personal relationship and comparing that to their primary and secondary languages in the workplace. And we found that about 65% of the time, a person's personal love language is one of their top two languages of appreciation. So it changes a little bit, and it also can change due to the context of your supervisor and colleagues and the languages and their actions that they use.
Okay, so certainly you're right. The kind of relationship is very different in the workplace than it is, hopefully,
yes.
with one spouse.
It should be.
And so that context, would you say, is the main differentiator between the two?
You know, yeah, I think it is. There are some differences between the two sets of languages and how they apply themselves in the relationships. And actually written a paper that's available on our website that describes that. But you know, largely, you have the issue of a power dynamic that exists in a work-based relationship. Somebody's the boss and somebody is being supervised or their colleagues, whereas in a family or a personal relationship, clearly those may be there in some way, but it's not the same. Mm-hmm. Obviously, in the workplace, you have a more formal kind of relationship, and there's certain boundaries, both touch and the kinds of language that you use that are viewed as appropriate or inappropriate. Another key difference is that in the workplace, a lot of the communication is in the context of groups, maybe small groups, you know, a team or a small division, whereas personal communication is usually one-on-one, although it may be
right.
in the context of a family. So that changes the dynamics as well. So you have that the power part, the formality and the boundaries, and then the group versus individual communication.
Gotcha. Now, you've been able to do a lot of research as you've been applying this, the five languages of appreciation. But what have you seen are the main causes why we have such a hard time appreciating people? Why do people feel so unappreciated at work?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a interesting question because people ask me that a lot, and they often have the answers in their own heads about it, and business owners have often a different answer, and they just feel like people expect too much.
Mm-hmm.
But my sense is that we found that there are really four core conditions that need to be in place for communication of appreciation to really be received and hit the target, if you will. And that is, first of all, it needs to be individualized and personal versus group-based and generic. And unfortunately, in spite of the work that you guys are doing as well as others, that, you know, there's still a lot of really sort of sloppy recognition and appreciation going on out there in that, you know, it's a blast email to, hey, good job, team, way to go. We got the project out the door. Well, that doesn't really, you know, hit the mark for the person who stayed up late last night entering the shipping labels, you know, to make sure it got done. So you know, it's not individualized and personalized. Secondly, it's often communicated in a language that's not important to the person. Words of affirmation is an important language. We find that it's 40% of the time it's the an individual's primary language. But there are a number of people that words don't mean that much. And so if all we're doing is saying something, then it doesn't get it for them. One individual said, you know, to be honest, I grew up in a setting where if somebody praised you, the next thing that was coming was an ask. You know, that they were setting you up for, you know, a manipulation or, you know, a favor. And he said, as a result, my, you know, radar goes up whenever somebody starts praising me. So you have to get the right language. The third issue that we see is that the appreciation or recognition isn't communicated regularly. I mean, if you just do it, you know, annually or semi-annually at their peer, you know, performance review, that doesn't get it done. You know, or as one guy told me, he said, you know, I resent that I only hear praise at my annual performance review, which is done every decade. You know, so it's sort of like, you know, it's just not happening. And then the other part is that it's not, people don't feel appreciated because they don't perceive what's being communicated as authentic and genuine. And, and you all, you know, do a great job of talking about credibility and consistency, and that's key. And, you know, I find in some settings, for example, here in the States, and I live in the Midwest, you know, I think two of the toughest places to work right now are healthcare and public schools. And, you know, the cynicism and sarcasm that reigns in those places is just pandemic. And you have to build some credibility that it's not you're just doing it because of the program or whatever. And so in our work, we actually won't go in and do a top-down kind of process because that automatically undermines the perceived authenticity. So we try to identify supervisors or teams that want to work on this, get it going, and then it tends to go viral from there. But clearly that authenticity issue is huge.
Very much so. And as you know, we talk about real recognition, and I think we're on the same page there. And it's something very, very critical piece to the meaningfulness and value that people perceive.
And, well, listen, the tough part about that is that it does have to do with their perception, right? I mean, we can be genuine and authentic, but sometimes we have to win their trust over time, and that can be frustrating sometimes.
Right, and very much learning what those individuals are perceiving, how they feel it, and what's right for them, right?
Correct, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I can't believe this. This is going by too fast. But we're going to have to stop for a short little break here, Paul.
Okay.
And so for our listeners, this is Roy Sonneson and Max Brown with our guests today, Dr. Paul White. And you're listening to Real Recognition Radio on the Voice America Business Channel. Please stay tuned. Come back for more with Languages of Appreciation.
Stocks, bonds, investment opportunities, financial news, and talk. We can help. Call us now toll-free, 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network. Relationships are the core of great businesses. Your employees are critical to the success of your business. Rideau helps you build positive relationships with your people. Rideau helps you inspire greatness in your people. We do it through the power of recognition and rewards. Rideau's clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. We're committed to our clients and our people. Together, Rideau and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Rideau client. Find us at rideau.com. Rideau is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Sonderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about, getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome
Welcome back to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and myself, Max Brown, and of course our guest today, Dr. Paul White, co-author of The Five Languages of Appreciation in the Workplace. Paul, you were just talking with Roy about how people don't feel appreciated, including those four components, and we've ended with that lack of authenticity or genuineness. How do you encourage people in the workplace to figure this out so that it doesn't come across as manipulative, and that they can become more sincere without forcing the sincerity?
Right. Yeah, it's a key issue. Well, because of that whole issue of needing to communicate in a way that's meaningful to them, we felt, and it's been confirmed, that it's critical to find out what's important to the other person. And, mm-hmm. you know, in the workplace, it's tough, you know, just to go up and say, hey, you know, how can I encourage you? Or, you know, that's just not a typical conversation in the workplace, and most people won't really know. So
right.
That's why we developed the Motivating by Appreciation Inventory. Because it's a simple, sort of innocuous, it's an online, takes maybe 15 minutes, it comes, a code for it comes automatically with the book, and it helps a person that's taking it identify their primary and their secondary languages of appreciation, as well as their lowest one, and we can talk about that later. But then what we found, and what I found, is I was working with teams of staff or leaders, that, you know, a manager would say, hey, Paul, the language is fine, but I need to know what to do. And so we went back and retooled it, and after you identify your primary language of appreciation, it then gives you a list of 25 to 35 specific actions within that language that you can specify and say, hey, this is what's important to me. So, for example, words of affirmation, you know, some people, you know, want it personal. Verbal is fine. Other people would like, you know, a tweet after or a text after they've finished a presentation, email. Some people like a handwritten note. What we then also found is that as we worked on that, the team members said, well, it sort of depends whether it's my teammates or my manager, because in quality time, I might want to have a, you know, one-on-one meeting with my supervisor, but I might want to have my friends over to watch a game, but it would feel weird to invite my supervisor. So we let them identify their colleagues, what actions are important for them from the colleagues, from the supervisors, and even for top-level people, their direct reports.
So this does take a little bit of work here, and what would you say to a manager who has, you know, let's say 25, 30 people in different locations, even remote locations?
Yeah, great point, because let me take the first part of you have 20 to 25 people that you're managing. I would argue that you can't manage that many people, but I know that happens. but in those settings, what we do is we say, okay, you can't do this all at once for everybody, but pick the key people that you can work on. And key people can either be the people that you know are discouraged, you know, let's say the 3 to 5 people on your team that you know are struggling, and focus on them for a few weeks and then move to the next group. That could be your key people that you absolutely don't want to lose, because we know like you all pointed out, this keeps people there. You mean we improve retention. Or it could be, sometimes I tell people, go for the easy win. The people that you are around and interact with on a day-to-day basis, and it's just easy to implement this. So you pick off 3 to 5, work on them for a while, and then it's sort of like, you know, you keep that going at a lower level over time, and then you go focus on another 3 to 5. But you can't do all 20 at once. I understand that. The long distance issue we're working on, and actually because that's more and more of an issue, and working with some international organizations where we're retooling both the inventory and the reports to reflect long distance relationships, because there's certain things that you can and can't do over distance.
Yeah, for sure. And it does make it more complicated.
Absolutely.
So what can someone do then when it comes to, let's say, for instance, you know that someone, or you discover, you take the inventory and you find out that quality time is what you really want.
Mm-hmm.
How would you communicate that to the people around you without seeming obnoxious?
We actually just finished an online Train the Trainer course for HR consultants and business coaches and consultants. And this issue comes up because one of the groups I said, people were coming back and they were sort of high-level professionals, and they said, you know, I don't want to seem like I'm asking for stuff if it's tangible gifts, or that I'm a leech and I, you know, I'm lonely and I need time. And I said, we can paint any language in a negative terms. The issue is this. The real key question is, if you're discouraged, how would somebody else encourage you in a way that makes a difference? So it's not like I'm asking for praise if it's words of affirmation, or it's like, you know, can I hang out with you kind of thing. It's like, hey, if I want to encourage you, or if I want to let you know that I really value you as part of the team, what's the best way that I can do that that will impact you and also not waste my time and energy? And part of our model is, hey, we're not trying to give you extra stuff to do. It's we're trying to help make your actions effective and so that you get done what you want to get done.
So that's also a bit of an answer to the next question for me, which is, you know, so how do people manage their time around something like this? You know, you're suggesting that we get to know each other at very individual levels, which makes a lot of sense. A lot of people simply say, you know, hey, I'm already doing 60, 70 hours a week. That
right.
would be really nice to do, but my goodness, how am I supposed to take care of them? Am I their psychologist? Am I their counselor?
Right, absolutely. You know? And that's not what we're looking at. So, you know, the process is this. When a person takes the inventory, they automatically, they get an individualized report that creates a PDF, and then it's theirs, nobody else gets it, then we encourage them to share that with their supervisor team. And we actually have a training process that we take groups through, and we can do it over the lunch hour, over staff meetings. We have a video-based one that people can do, and create a group profile, actually. So you can, it's on our website. It's free. You can go and get this template and plug in the team members and see what their languages are, and then we have forms for action plans and that kind of stuff. So it doesn't have to take a lot of time. In fact, usually it's we will meet an hour every couple of weeks for three or four times max, and it gets it done.
Yeah, very succinct then in what they need to do.
Yes.
Yeah, it's great. What are some of the insights you can give on the types of acts of service that have resonated most with employees?
Yeah. You know, acts of service is an interesting one because it's very specific to the setting or industry that you work in. So, for example, I worked with a dental group, and for them, it was helping one another clean up their stations at the end of the day if somebody got done early. I've had some situations where it's, you know, help get caught up on filing. But the absolute number one act of service that I hear is help me get my computer to work right. And so it may not, you know, you may not have that technical capability. I clearly don't. But you can help facilitate and make that happen, you know, with the IT person or bringing in. So it can be that, or it can be sometimes as simple as, hey, I'm going to the supply room. Is there anything, you know, I could pick up for you? Or, and a lot of times it is more around a specific event that they're behind on getting a project done, and if you could help them either with the project or with some other task that would free them up. That was the other one that a lot of people will identify. Give me a little bit of sort of administrative help just temporarily so that I can focus on a big project I need to.
Yeah, fun stuff. You know, I worked actually with Southwest Airlines, and I was interviewing some of their employees on how they treat each other. And one gentleman said, we have a pay-it-forward mentality here.
Cool.
And I said, well, what does that mean?
Right.
I said, a lot of people declare nice things, but, you know, to deliver on them is very different. He goes, let me give you just one example. When you go into the bathroom, the paper towel has already been dispensed for you because when you leave, you always dispense the towel for the next person.
Yeah, cool.
Now, that's interesting observation, isn't it? Just thinking about just becoming more aware that there's more than just yourself in the workplace is a different mindset.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I had an example given where a team that often would entertain customers for dinner and would go out to eat a lot, at one point, after a while, this gal who was part of the team said, my manager actually said, let me order for you. And so he had been observing over time what she liked, and he ordered for her and got it right, what she wanted. And so to her, you know, it was like, cool, he was paying attention to what I like and what's important to me.
Oh, Okay. So, and if he would have messed it up, that was a big risk, man.
Yeah, yeah. He was stepping out.
I could have been ordered the wrong sushi, and he'd have been really upset. Wow, that's fantastic. And when I think about this, are there any places where people, or are you finding in your assessments where they gravitate towards one over another? Is there a majority in one language over another, or is it pretty spread out?
You know, it varies a lot, and that's part of the fun of the group profile, because you'll see teams that have a certain slant or bias towards certain languages. And what I'm finding is that, you know, words of affirmation and quality time are coming out 35% to 40% each, and it can vary a little bit, as top languages. And sometimes we have ties, just the way that it's scored. And then acts of service is a strong third. And then tangible gifts tends to be on the lower end. And that's an interesting point for groups that use gifts and rewards, because it's, and we need to be careful how we interpret it. It's not that gifts aren't important or tangible rewards aren't important, but what people are telling us is they're less important than the verbal communication and time that I want with my colleagues or supervisors. So if a recognition program focuses primarily on awards and rewards, I think they're at risk. Especially, I get a lot of feedback about, you know, public recognition, that in the groups that I'm working with, 25 to 30% of the people say, I don't want to go up front and get an award. Yeah. And it's not like I don't want to. I had one gal said, you can give me an award, but you're going to have to shoot me to get me up there. So, I mean, it's a pretty strong reaction.
And that, absolutely.
And the same kind of thing with, you know, company picnics or volunteer picnics or whatever. For some people, you know, going to an unstructured group social event is torture. I mean, if you think about, you know, an introverted, shy person who's just your sort of great work taskmaster and gets it done, you know, you can't think of anything else worse. And yet we're trying to reward or encourage them, and we're totally missing the boat.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are opportunities, but we've really got to be sensitive to how to do that, don't we?
Yeah. And I think one way around that, I've talked to some groups about, is to maybe do some group-based kinds of things, but let people opt in or out. You know, it's you know, so that you can do the group picnic. But if you don't want to come and you'd rather have a gift card to, you know, Barnes & Noble, go for it. Or if, you know, whatever it might be. And I think we need to be flexible with what people want and need. If our goal, sometimes I find that companies or management's goal is to look like they're doing something when in actuality they're not getting the job done, and that's not always their goal sometimes, unfortunately.
Well, I think that's an interesting point and an important one to make as well. You know, that it might even seem easier from a management perspective to just buy a gift and hand it out to everyone and say, hey, you've all been appreciated, and assume that it's done. And when, in fact, what you're suggesting here is it's not happening at all that way. And that, in fact, if there's nothing linked to it, there's not a lot going on with it.
Right, absolutely.
Not money well spent.
Right. And it's just like in any relationship, if you're trying to encourage or show appreciation to somebody and it's not working, not only does it not help them, but you start to get frustrated because it's like, dude, I told you that you're doing a great job and I've praised you and all that. What's up? Well, you know, and so then you get frustrated and want to give up when the issue is that you're not using the right language or the right action.
No, that's exactly right. Hey, we have to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll continue this conversation on the five languages of appreciation in the workplace with our guest today, Dr. Paul White. You're listening to Real Recognition Radio. This is Max Brown and Roy Saunderson reminding you to keep it real. We'll be right back.
Up-to-date business and financial news. Call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790.
The experts are here.
Voice America Business Network. The next generation of employees is more sophisticated about recognition. They want to make a difference to their organizations, to their environment, and to their world. Rideau offers a full suite of recognition and reward solutions tailored to meet our clients' needs strategically, technologically, and globally. Rideau's clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. Together, Rideau and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Rideau client. Find us at rideau.com. Rideau is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about, getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Real Recognition Radio. I'm Roy Saunderson and Max Brown with our guests today, Dr. Paul White, co-author of The Five Languages of Appreciation in the Workplace. And, Paul, I was just fascinated by what your research has been showing about perceptions towards maybe tangible gifts being on the lower end of things. But for those where that is still meaningful, what do you suggest for determining what's right to give to people and even the fairness on the amount to maybe even spend on that kind of gift?
Yeah. You know, the fairness issue is a huge one that people raise as we talk about this. But I think, you know, one of the benefits of this process is it provides a structure that allows you to get to know your people, you know, I mean, at a different level. And, in fact, I had one team member said, we've worked together as a team for 10 years, but the inventory and the process helped us get to know things about one another that we didn't know before that was really helpful. And I think it provides a structure to say, hey, you know, if you want, I see tangible gifts as maybe your secondary language, you know, what would hit the mark for you? And, you know, and again, we have that action item list for people, but it wouldn't necessarily come out on the inventory. But as part of our training process, we give it again and let the groups work through it. But I think it provides an opportunity to say, you know, are we talking about a Starbucks or, you know, you want a magazine subscription, you want tickets to the theater or what? Tell me, you know, what would be encouraging to you if we got something, you know, and I don't know too many people that wouldn't share about that. The fairness issue, I think, is important to address that, hey, this is a process. This isn't a one-time thing. It's not like I'm getting this person a gift card to, I don't know, iTunes so they can buy, you know, buy some music or whatever, and then I sent you a note because, you know, your language is words of affirmation. This is a process over time, and, you know, we're going to even it out over time. And yeah, you need, and part of it has to do with building that trust. That, again, comes that, hey, I told you what I wanted. You gave me what I wanted. I've sort of changed my thoughts now. I've got enough verbal praise. I wouldn't mind getting some, you know, perks over here. And so to keep in communication about it, I think, is a key issue. And as long as they know that you're listening and that you'll respond, I think it can work out.
Gotcha. Now, you and I know, as we've gone through this recession, we've certainly heard a lot of employers who were used to giving rewards and recognition, and it's been tough for them to do so through that recessionary period. What advice do you give to people like this who use this whole financial constraint as an excuse for not giving recognition?
Yeah, well, first, I would say, I mean, I sort of cut my teeth professionally in social service agencies and public schools and all that kind of stuff, nonprofits, and those people don't have money to,
right,
you know, do this. And so part of our goal and vision was to provide resources that can be used to encourage and show appreciation that don't cost a lot of money. In fact, we wrote a little handout, actually, that we have on our website that you can give to your boss. It's how to show appreciation without spending a chunk of change, you know, because it doesn't have to be about money and things. And, in fact, I would say tangible gifts, it's not about the amount. It's about the thought, really. I mean, it's that you took time to sort of get to know them and then, you know, took time and effort to go get them something you knew they would like. But the other side of it is, I mean, if they quit doing any kind of appreciation or recognition, I say, well, you know, you're basically setting yourself up to not survive the difficult economic environment, because we know and this is the selling point, I think, to managers, is that we know that if people truly feel appreciated, we're going to reduce your costs because we're going to reduce staff turnover along with the training costs and, you know, having to find new people. We're going to reduce absenteeism. We're going to reduce tardiness. We're going to improve customer satisfaction because we know that employees that feel valued interact more positively with your customers than, you know, the gal at the mall that you go in and, you know, you feel like you're interrupting her texting, you know, because you're there and want something. And so we can make it more likely that you're going to actually survive difficult economic times because we're going to reduce your costs and improve customer satisfaction, and it's going to be a difference. And actually, you can become a magnet, and this is true even for nonprofits, of where people want to work and where people want to volunteer.
Right.
And so we're giving you the tools to become the best in class.
Gotcha. Now, I know in your book, and I hadn't thought about this, I've been so focused on my primary language for so long, I hadn't thought about what about the weakness areas, and you refer to it in the book as maybe even being a blind spot, that if a certain language isn't your strength, that maybe you're not going to see the need in others. How do you address that?
Yeah, I think it's an important piece, especially for managers and supervisors, to know that there are certain languages that just don't come to each of us naturally, and it's our lowest and least valued language. And so, in fact, I had a situation with a CEO, and we were working with his management team, and his lowest language was words of affirmation, and his highest one was acts of service. And he said, my language is get her done. If you want to show me appreciation, don't tell me about it. Come help me get some stuff off of my plate. And but the flip side of it was three out of the five people that directly reported to him, words of affirmation was their top language. And he said, you know, I think maybe I haven't been given enough verbal praise around here. And they looked at it and they said, you think? and they chuckled about it. And so what can happen is it becomes just that blind spot where you don't think about it. It doesn't come naturally. And so you're not communicating in that language potentially to the people that it's really important. And so we've found that for all of us, myself included, time is low on my list. One of my assistants' times is her high. So I have to plan. I have to make a plan to spend time with her in a way that's important to her and put that in my calendar. If I don't, I don't think about it naturally. So
yeah.
It can be a really – and I think it can be the difference between somebody moving forward in their career and somebody either getting stuck or not even doing well, because you've got to learn how to manage all different kinds of people.
Right, so this is where just knowing what the preferences are of each of your people, even if it's not one of yours, you've just got to highlight focusing on those people's preferences, not your own.
Absolutely.
Gotcha. Now, I'm just curious, do you have any particular examples of a company where it's been a well-rounded adaptation and adopting of the whole languages of appreciation that you can share with us?
Sure. Yeah, and in fact, you know, one of the questions I'm asked is, you know, how does this work with the tough guy kind of industries, you know? I mean, construction and manufacturing. I mean, this sounds okay for nurses and school teachers and all that, but, you know, what about guys and, you know, that they don't really care about somebody praising them? And one of the most fun and exciting groups I worked with was the manufacturing team. They brought me in. We worked with the leadership team, and that went well. One of the those guys said, hey, I want to do it with my supervisors. We did it with his supervisors, and they then did it with their floor workers. And then a little bit later, they said, hey, we've got this tough team that's not doing well. We've had about 30% turnover in the last couple of months, and they just don't feel great. And so, can you help us out? So I went in. We went through the process of identifying, giving an introduction of what it's about, and why appreciation is important, what it looks like in the workplace, had them take the inventory, went through the results, started working the plan. And it was, like I said, a 6 to 8, maybe at this point, maybe 12-week process. A little bit later, they called me back and they said, hey, I want to give you a report. What's up? Said, not only have we haven't lost anybody else, but he said two of the employees on their own called up a couple of the people that had left and said, hey, this place has changed.
Mm.
It's positive. You need to come back. And two people came back. And so,
wow.
You know, to get a turnaround like that, I mean, it's one thing to stop the bleeding. It's another thing to, you know, get things going in the right direction. So that was pretty cool.
No kidding. That's pretty remarkable. Now, I know earlier on you even described places like healthcare having a tough time with appreciation.
Right.
Why that industry? When you think that here they are, so caring of others, how come they can't care about themselves?
Yeah, boy, that's there are a lot of levels to that issue, but part of it is, I mean, think about this, just the model of stress. We know that when people have more demands and less resources, that creates stress. So what's mm-hmm. happened is we've created a lot more demands in the U.S. I know you're in Canada, Roy, but in the U.S. with, you know, the new regulations that are coming down, they have to do a lot more paperwork. They're transferring to electronic records, and
right.
They're not getting paid anymore and all that kind of stuff. And so there are a lot of levels of supervision, and that's an issue as well. It's sort of a systemic problem there. And so they have decisions that are coming from on high that from people that they don't know, and so it really undermines that. There's a lot of cynicism in healthcare. And it's less about the people. Because, and this has been an interesting finding, I find that the people that really grab onto this are the frontline workers, the nurses,
yes.
the nursing assistants, the house cleaning group. And what they want to know is, how do I encourage and support my colleagues?
Mm.
And it's less about top-down supervisor to supervisee, as give me the tools that we can support one another. It's fine if my supervisor wants to do this, that's good. But we need to know how to encourage each other. In fact, I had one administrative assistant who actually worked in a long-distance relationship with another gal who was parallel, and she said, man, this is so helpful because I kept trying to encourage Debbie, but it wasn't working. In fact, I was going the opposite way. And she said, now I know what I need to do. And so for them, you know, lots of times it's about peer relationships rather than top-down.
Gotcha. Well, these are some great insights on the application of the five languages of appreciation. I appreciate you sharing them so much with us, Paul.
My pleasure.
Well, it looks like we're due for another short intermission. So for our listeners, please come back for our final segment as we join up with our guest, Dr. Paul White, and learn more about the languages of appreciation. And for Real Recognition Radio, I'm Roy Saunderson and Max Brown, reminding you to keep it real.
Whether the market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
Relationships are the core of great businesses. Your employees are critical to the success of your business. Rideau helps you build positive relationships with your people. Rideau helps you inspire greatness in your people. We do it through the power of recognition and rewards. Rideau's clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. We're committed to our clients and our people. Together, Rideau and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Rideau client. Find us at rideau.com. Rideau is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about, getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Real Recognition Radio. Let's continue the conversation with Dr. Paul White, our guest today, and get some final pieces on the five languages of appreciation in the workplace. Paul, it's been a great conversation, and I've enjoyed it a lot.
As I've
been thinking about this in the last segment where you were talking with Roy, I am curious, actually, about different industries, and whether you find different segments or different industries more attracted to one way of appreciation over another. For instance, engineers, or like you talked about, manufacturing in one group, or you know, the hard, more hardened group, maybe in a factory floor or something that you might have a stereotype about.
Mm-hmm.
And are they actually prone towards one type of language, or are they all over the map as well?
You know, that's a great question, Max, because, you know, there's sort of two levels of that. On the one hand, there really aren't that big of differences across industries. I would say the differences are in the actions. In other words, and people also ask me about generationally, you know, how does this work with millennials or Gen X, Gen Y, or the younger? And again, the languages seem to be consistent. In other words, the quality time, words of affirmation, tangible gifts, physical touch, and acts of service, but the actions within those differ. But I would say that for engineers, manufacturing, I think we need to be careful, those that work in this area, not to overuse words. I would say that's when quality time and acts of service pop up higher. So I think, you know, if we're just doing the notes or the emails or whatever it might be with words, you may be missing the mark in some of those industries where it's less verbal. I'm actually, you know, I have the opportunity to speak to a global summit of Microsoft managers that are coming in here in a month, and the manager knows that they've got to get this going. You know, you probably heard the joke, you know, an outgoing computer science person is a person that looks at your shoes versus their own when they're talking to you. So, you know, it's not always about words. And in fact, with engineers and less verbal people, we often start with written communication rather than personal face-to-face communication, because that's easier for them to do.
Yeah, but very easy to stereotype when, in fact, it's not always the case is basic. I mean, it still comes down to the individual level, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. A lot of people ask me as well, from a cultural standpoint, we do travel a lot internationally, and so I find myself in Europe sometimes, or even in Asia, speaking, and people will ask, well, is it different? And I often find that it isn't about, it's the same thing. People are still individual people. There
right.
might be a different ways of displaying it afterwards, but there are different people that still want the tangible gift over the act of service, and then there's some that just want that word of affirmation just to know where you're at, or just to spend some more time with you at lunch, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think the same thing about, you know, asked about the languages. You know, the five love languages are been published in 40 languages. We're already in Spanish. We're coming out in Russian, German, Korean, Hungarian, Afrikaans, Chinese next year. So the need is there, especially as their economies grow and as they have these kinds of work-based relationships. I think the opportunity is huge.
Absolutely. Is there anything that surprised you from the research as you were writing the book and going through all of this?
You know, the main surprise was the emphasis on collegial relationships versus a supervisor-supervisee one. The other one the surprise is how passionate people are about this. When, you know, I'm talking to somebody, somebody hear about the project or what work I do, and they say, oh, man, I need to get that book to my supervisor. Or, you know, people will sort of spill stories all of a sudden. And there's a lot of hurting people out there, and in some ways unnecessarily so. So I think just that the need is huge, that there's been good efforts in some ways to try to meet the need, but there's still a lot of need to grow in understanding how to individually communicate appreciation in an effective way versus doing this group-based generic stuff that a lot of organizations are doing.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And like you said, there's a lot of suffering out there, which comes to mind actually now is, so there's some people that will read this book and they'll say, gosh, I just wish I could give this to my boss, but how do you give this to your boss?
Yeah. In fact, we're trying to come up with sort of a Tom Shoe kind of approach of a social entrepreneurial thing. We may be working with a group of microfinancing that, you know, if you give a gift of a certain amount to this group, then we'll send you the book to your boss in their name. I mean, we're trying to figure that out. But the easiest way that we found so far is First of all, we do have some short white papers or 1- and 2-page articles on our website, which is Appreciation at Work, and the word is at, spelled out, not the at sign, but appreciationatwork.com, or my website, drpaulwhite.com. And it's like an introduction, like the the 10 top easiest ways to show appreciation to almost anybody, or like I said, how to show appreciation without spending a chunk of change. And you say, hey, I was reading this and thought you might be interested in it. I've had 3 people in the last week say, hey, I saw your book on the desk of my manager, and I know they're taking a look at it. And so we actually say it doesn't have to start at the top. And most of the time, it doesn't. It's either a mid-level manager or just some team members that say, hey, you know, this is important to me. I'm reading through it. Would you like to talk about it over lunch? And then it goes sort of viral from there. We had one situation where we actually presented it to the HR and personnel VP, and he said, yeah, whatever, you know, and wasn't that excited about it. But the person underneath him said, you know, I really would like to do this. And he asked his supervisor, you know, could I have the resources just to try this with my team, and would that be okay? And then we could see if it works. And absolutely, you know, he said, sure, because the cost is low. And they did it. It turned it around. And later, like maybe 2 months later, the supervisor said, hey, you know, been hearing about this book and, you know, this process about showing appreciation, but yeah, I think we ought to do it. I mean, it's sort of like, you know, it's my idea now, but, mm-hmm. you know, just for people to start where they are. And I really believe, and Dr. Chapman, I believe that it's you can make a difference in any kind of work relationship that's, you know, just around you. And it doesn't have to be a huge system kind of thing. If it is, great, but start where you are in the relationships where you have influence, and it can grow from there.
Well, we were delighted you could join us today to talk about it. One more time for our listeners, where could they find more information on the book?
Yeah, it's at appreciationatwork.com, and then drpaulwhite.com as well.
That's great. We're sure grateful you would take the time to be with us today on the show. We've definitely enjoyed this conversation.
My pleasure. I have too. Thank you so much, Max.
Yeah, Roy, anything you'd like to add?
No, I'm just I'm holding the book even as we are talking to you. So, I mean, as I shared, certainly have lived a long time on the 5 love languages and just very grateful for your dedication with Dr. Chapman on getting this into the workplace as well.
Well, thank you, Roy, for this opportunity. I really value it.
And we look forward to staying connected for sure. We appreciate the good work you're doing. And, of course, to all our listeners, we're grateful. We're grateful for the opportunity to be here, to be able to share best practices, and to be able to have great guests and authors and experts on the show with us. Thank you for coming each week to listen. That's a Real Recognition Radio. You can always find more information about us at the Recognition Management Institute at realrecognition.com. You can find more about this show at rideau.com, rideau.com/radio, or realrecognitionradio.com. For all of you who'd like to give us some feedback, please do that at feedback@realrecognition.com. And again, thank you for being here every week. We're grateful for it. We continue to work hard to try to make sure we deliver value and bring content that is worth listening to. Until next week, this is Max Brown and Roy Saunderson reminding you to keep it real.
Thank you again for tuning in Real Recognition Radio. Please join Roy Saunderson and Max Brown again next Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel for more motivational tips to help your employees perform better. We'll talk again next week.
The next generation of employees is more sophisticated about recognition. They want to make a difference to their organizations, to their environment, and to their world. Rideau offers a full suite of recognition and reward solutions tailored to meet our clients' needs strategically, technologically, and globally. Rideau's clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. Together, Rideau and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Rideau client. Find us at rideau.com Rideau is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.